I was gonna say before Danny starts, but you need to see, finish off that. There are two professionals that I have encountered in my life that have transformed and changed a portion of my life. Candace is the second one. One was early in life. She's with Carol, and I met with her. We had no idea what we needed to do and the depth of questions that needed to be addressed until we sat down and talked with Candace and just changed my thinking forever, organized my life in a way that I'll be forever grateful. So thank you, Candace.
Thank you. That's very kind.
She just offers counsel and advice and wisdom for just a variety of folks in a variety of circumstances. And I would encourage you to ask her questions offline to find out what you need to do going forward, because I know too many people have not done that kind of preparation, and I was one of them, and just so thankful that that part of our life is important. Remarkable for us.
Thank you.
It's all yours.
Thank you, Jack. So at a minimum, you need a healthcare power of attorney, which allows you to designate who you want to make the decisions for your healthcare. You'd also want to have the living will. We talked about that a lot, the Terry Schiavo documents, what I call it. That seems to be the only thing that everybody can agree on. They know what I'm talking about. You need a HIPAA release. Sometimes hospitals have interesting ways of looking at those. If you go to the doctor, you'll get a HIPAA release, but it will be for that one doctor and usually for one person. But if you would really like your children or in-laws or somebody to call, even your spouse, to call and find out, if you're in the hospital, for example, you need that too. And let me explain that 18-year-olds need all of these things. I know a friend drove her 18-year-old to the hospital, dropped her off, came back in, and they would not give her any information because she didn't have any papers of health care or anything, even though they were paying for it. So fortunately, she had them. She drove home, got them, and came back. Now, I know this probably won't happen everywhere, but one way you can guarantee it won't happen is if you have something like this. okay, any questions about that? Because that's kind of quick to go over, but we've talked about it so much already in here. I felt like that was enough. But if anybody has any questions, I'll entertain them. Excuse me. Okay, finances. Durable power of attorney. While you're incapacitated, you will not necessarily be able to count on a power of attorney because not everyone recognizes them. Some banks don't recognize them. Some financial institutions don't recognize them. Sometimes they do. Every year, they keep going to the legislature and trying to get that changed. There was a two-year time in 1900s, I think, that two or four-year, that if you signed it that year, they were guaranteed. They had to be honored. But they don't have to be honored anymore. They changed it the last session to where if they don't honor it, they have to say why in writing. They have to write a letter, and then you as a person can either write the answer or get your lawyer to write the answer, which says you are wrong because blank, 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 and then you give it back to them within a certain number of days. If they don't answer within a certain number of days, they have to accept. It has to be accepted. But as you can see, the problem is you're just really, it's taken a longer time, and it still is not guaranteed. You could hope that they would recognize it, but you can't be guaranteed. Yes.
Can I ask you, you said we could stop you.
Sure.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but can you name a bank or a financial institution that does not recognize?
Fidelity. Charles Schwab.
Okay.
They have their own powers of attorney, but you can't be guaranteed. Some title companies, they don't like it because they don't know. They can't be guaranteed that it's still good. I mean, you can sign it and then file for divorce the next day, and then I think 30 days later, you can be divorced. So if it's very long, so there are all kinds of issues. They just don't like it. They would rather have the person sign it if they can. So one way to avoid that is with a living trust, because they know they have to recognize the trustee that you designate. But you can't be guaranteed that they would recognize the power of attorney, but we can sure fight them over it. It's kind of annoying, but, you know, that's the way it is right now.
What's that term on the bankers? That power of attorney,
a durable power of attorney. It's a durable power of attorney. So it can be effective immediately, which is what we recommend. Or it can be a springing power, which means it does not come into effect until you have become incapacitated. But then the question about incapacitated is, well, they want to have it proven to them that you are incapacitated, or they can be sued. So that's why we don't like that. We figure if you trust the person enough to handle your finances anyway, you should have it be effective right now. You could always hide it in your desk, I suppose. So anyway, any questions about that? I wanted to talk about Medicaid and elder law, too, because I heard some people talking about long-term care insurance. And, you know, things are different. My parents are in a place in Houston, and they're both getting very good care, but it's just very expensive. And long-term care is something we recommend everybody have, but it has gotten more and more and more expensive. And some people are having difficulty collecting on it. But still, it's really the best thing that you can have. And otherwise, you can lose thousands of dollars. Now, we started Medicaid and elder law. And what can happen is if you end up with down to like $2,000, you can have $2,000 if you're single and a house and a car, and they will not count against you for getting Medicaid if that's something that you are to the point where you have to do. You can have a lot, I think it's $135,000 if you're married. You can have more cash if you're married than if you're single and be qualified for Medicaid. But you would have to, it's very complicated, and you can do things to get to that point, but you can't start giving money away, so just don't do that. Yes, Ben?
Is it still a three-year
look back? I think it might be five. Okay. I think it's five. But there are things you can buy and do that they don't count it at all. So we have a whole list of things, and I haven't been doing that recently, so I'm not particularly familiar with that, but it's kind of interesting. Okay, number two, not keeping your estate plan current. If you don't keep it current, you'd be surprised the results. And I have a whole hour-long talk just on this, but I want to give you a couple of what I think are common examples, probably not for this group, but you probably know people in this situation where you'd be very surprised. And it just so happens that let's have a situation where John is married to Mary. So Mary and John have three children, and two of them are theirs, and one is a child from a previous marriage. So he dies, and they have a home. You would think that she would get the home. You probably would like for her to get the home, but that's not the law. The law would be if they bought it after they were married, she would keep her half of the home in Texas. The children, all three of them, theirs and his, would get the other half. So essentially, she wouldn't get any of his community property. And so that's kind of a harsh result, but that's what it is. And I've had some situations like that where he died without a will. And you can fix all this, don't forget, with an estate plan. But husband died without a will, had three children, two with the lady he was married to, one who was 17 and a half from a previous marriage. So they all got the house, half of it, only two of them were minors, so they couldn't really own it. So we were going to have to go to court anyway and get a guardianship. We ended up, because there was so much equity in it, she was able to buy out, as we went to court, the younger children's half, and then we waited till the older one turned 18, and then she was able to sign some things. And so we were able to fix it. Like I say, we're practical people. We can always figure something out. But it was a lot more expensive, I'm sure, than they wanted to do. It took a lot more time. It was very stressful. But we got it done. So it would have been so much easier if they had just had a will or an estate plan or a trust that left everything to her. Now, if it was, let's say that it was still his house, he bought it before they got married. Well, then she would not get anything. The kids would get everything, the whole house, because it's separate property. And it's very distressing. So everybody needs to have something. 80% of Texans, is my understanding, is the latest, that don't have any sort of planning at all. So you're in good company if you don't have any planning, and we're used to that. So another example that happens is a widow marries a widower. They both have a house. They move into one, sell one house, move into the other. And if that person that owns it dies, then we've kind of got the same issues. So anyway, yes.
Did you retitle it?
Retitle it. That is retitling.
No, retitle the property.
When you buy it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you could do that. But do people do that? Anybody that doesn't have an estate plan, they're not going to usually do that either. Well, and then the kids might have something to say, and so it's no, but that's a very good question because, yeah, you could retitle it, but then you've got considered a gift to that other person. And so if you're married, that's okay. If you're not married, then it's you've got a gift tax issue, but I won't go into that. So I do have a book where, you know, like I said, everybody has an estate plan. It says, did you write it or did the state of Texas write it? And so I have something. I have a book. If anybody wants one when they leave, these books I'll give to you. It's one that we had written. It's in huge print. And I think it has cartoons also. The big print that we like. It says, if you have not created a valid will, the Texas legislature has drafted one for you. It certainly may not be what you want, but here it is. The last will and testament. According to the Texas legislature, being of sound mind and memory, I, who waited too long, make this my last will and testament. And so it goes into all of that. So I love it. It's really funny, and especially funny to me as a lawyer, so it's probably not especially funny to anybody else. But anyway, so we talked about no planning, inadequate planning. So I have a whole hour-long talk on do-it-yourself planning, and I even have to cut that short because I've had so many instances where people have done their own planning, and they're very smart people, but they mess it up and they don't get it right. And the biggest culprits are engineers and CPAs. So my dad's a CPA. He's the smartest person I know, and he didn't mess up the will. He had a long time ago, Vincent Elkins drew it up. And so they did a fantastic job. And then he decided to move his IRA to another place later on after I became a lawyer. And I saw what he did. And I said, oh, you messed it up. You did this and this and this. He got so upset. But, I mean, to a lot of people, the IRA is their biggest investment. And so he really thought everything was going where he thought it was going, but the IRA was not going where he thought it was going. So now the engineers on the engineers. Since, as you may know, you may or may not know, if you know my husband, you know he's an engineer. You don't know that he's the engineer of all engineers. He is. I promise you, if he weren't married to me, he'd have that sucker off the internet so fast. And he, you know, engineers are darned if they're going to pay anybody to do something they can do better. But anyway, I don't want to go into all the details, but the bottom line is the forms are usually not right for Texas. They could be right. Theoretically, they could be right. They might be right now. I did one online one time to see what would happen. It was not as big as a disaster as I had predicted, but it was not right. But even if you've got the right forms that you're working from, you still don't know how to fill them out because probably a lot of you don't know that your retirement account, annuities, and certain bank accounts don't go by your will or by your trust. For example, if you have a joint account with your spouse, it may or may not go. It depends on whether it's a joint tenancy or joint tenancy with right of survivorship. Those are two different things, and they're hugely different, but most people don't know the difference. That's inadequate, do it yourself. The second one is out of state. And people think their wills from out of state are void. They are probably not void, so you can not worry about that. I have gotten in, I guess, wills from probably 20 different states. Sometimes we have to do a little extra work. Actually, sometimes we have to do a lot of extra work, but we can get them in if we have to. However, they don't take advantage of Texas law. And so the biggest one is independent administration. In Texas, there are some good way, you know, if you don't have a huge estate, they're really not bad to do because you can file it in court. And if you have everything set up right, you can get independent administration, which means the executor can do everything that an executor appointed by the court could do, only he doesn't have to ask permission. He doesn't have to go to the court and say, can I sell the house? And then once I get a contract, then he has to go back and say, is this contract okay? Yes. Then can I close on it? I mean, it's terrible. Then he has to get permission to distribute all the property, to pay utilities. Otherwise, he can just do it on his own. He has to follow the law, and he would probably would have to get it. Well, he would have to get a lawyer. You didn't used to have to file it with a lawyer. Now you do in almost every court in Texas. But you don't get independent administration if you don't. Now, if you come from California, for example, none of us know anybody from California, I guess. They have different laws there. They're similar, but they don't have independent administration. So if it's not set up in the will, you don't get it unless if the cards are laid, I can lay them out just right, then I can get it, but I can't be guaranteed it. But I can guarantee that in Travis County, Judge Herman won't sign off on that if is anybody under the age of 18. But if you put it in the will, you've got it. But nobody from California or really any other state usually has that language in it. And so the will might be not void, and it might go to where you want it to, but it might be very expensive to do it. So the other thing about California is they have community property as we do, but it's different in a lot of different ways. And one of the main ways it's different is if you have an inheritance. For example, if you inherited some money, and let's say you inherited $100,000 and put it in an account in California and it's separate property because it's your inheritance. Anything you're given or you inherit is your own separate property, even if you're married. So in California, if it makes any interest, it stays separate property. So you move to Texas, you assume the same thing. Texas has a different law. Income from separate property is community property. And so if you keep on doing it and it's all commingled, then you end up with community property instead of separate property. And so there are ways around that, but if you don't know about it, then you don't know what to do about it. So I just wanted to mention that not all states take advantage of Texas law, but things can be done to take care of it. Out of date. I think my boss told me the other day that the average will is 19.6 years old, which means you used to have to worry about who was going to be who would take care of your children. Now you worry about which child you're going to pick to be the executor. I mean, so it's just a totally different thing. And I know that's something that we faced, but at this point, are there any questions or can we go on to the next page? I feel like I'm racing, but that's okay.
Say you have one of those 20-year-plus wills.
Still valid.
Still valid, but it might be to your advantage, I take it, to just do a new will.
Yeah.
And to get all these kind of things straightened out, correct?
Yeah. I think that's a fair thing. That's what I think, yes.
This, in terms of the out-of-state thing,
mm-hmm.
Your will is drawn in Texas.
Right.
You're spending 5 months and 3.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But your domicile is in Texas.
Right.
The will can still be filed in Texas and probated.
Yes. Correct? Yes. Yes. In fact, you don't have to be domiciled in Texas to have it probated here. You can be domiciled somewhere else, and if nobody files it, you know, you can file it in Texas. And sometimes it's whoever gets to the courthouse first, but you have to have some nexus here, which means either property here or personal property even, or you can have a relative here, just a relative in this state, and you can probate it. Now, doesn't have to be probated here. It can be probated in the other state, and if the push comes to shove and anybody argues about it, the domiciliary state wins, but doesn't have to. So Texas has always been of the opinion that we're going to do what we can to get wills in, whether they're Texas or others. I mean, so. But you don't want to rely solely on a will for estate planning. But let me explain to you this, believe it or not, I've had this happen. For a will to be effective, first of all, you have to be dead. So not everybody knows that. I've had people call and say, you know, somebody's so-and-so sick, can we go ahead and probate it ahead of time? I'm like, no, you can't do that. No, they do have to have died. And second, it has to be admitted to probate before it's effective. So somebody can take a will to a bank and show that you're appointed the executor, but if it hasn't been probated, they're going to give it back to you and say, go file it in court and get it taken care of. And so that has to also happen. And the other thing I wanted to explain to you is what probate is and how it works. And it's really a simple concept. It's not as mysterious as it appears to be. What it is it takes the name. It's the court process of taking the name off of the piece of property and putting the right name on. And the person's died. They can't sign the papers. That's all it is. So the question as to whether you have to probate a will or not is not whether there is a will, but it's what the property is. For example, I have told people that have come in that have a very nicely drawn up will, and I look at what they have and I say, you know, you could probate it if you want to, but you're not required to because you're going to be able to get title to all these assets anyway. Now, it's kind of hard to get to that point, especially if you have real estate, but you could do that. And so, but I've also had people come in without any planning at all, no will, no trust, no nothing. I said, you've got to go to probate court because we cannot change title to any of the assets without doing it. So I would assume, you know, a lot of people will say, we don't have an estate. And I'll ask them, well, do you have a house? Well, yeah, okay. Do you have a retirement account? Yeah. Do you have kids? Yeah. Well, then, okay, you need to do all of those things because you have an estate and you need to do something. The other thing that the will can't do is take care of your children. And like I said, a lot of people's difficulty is who's going to take care of the children. But if you don't decide, guess who gets to decide? The state or the county, really, I guess. They get to decide.
Underage,
yes. But, so let's say, and remember I said about the will, it's not valid until you're dead and it's been probated. So what if you're in an accident? You're both in an accident. You can't take care of your children. So it doesn't do any good to go take the will to court and say, Judge, I'm the one that's named to take care of the children. They'll say, so? They're still alive. They're not dead. It hasn't been probated. So in Texas, there's a new form that we have that they've passed that we can use now, which does it if you're incapacitated. So you can just say, if for some reason I'm unable to take care of my children, then this is the person I want to do it. So we'll put that in the will and in the separate piece of paper because we want that to happen no matter whether you're incapacitated or whether you've died or not, because I would assume that that's what you would want. So that's one thing a will can't do. Also, minors, as I mentioned, don't own any property. They can't. Sometimes there's a certain amount of cash they can have in a bank account that you don't have to get a guardianship for. I think it's $30,000. I can't remember. Maybe it's not quite that much. You have to have a custodian, of course, but if it's more than that, you're going to have a guardianship, which means you have to go to court. That is a royal pain, going to court. You have to, you can't spend it without asking permission, and you have to do an accounting every year. And so that's something that we would want to avoid, of course. Whether we have a trust or not, anything that goes to the children through a will on your death should be in a trust because then they don't have an estate. The trustee that you name would handle all of those things. Let's see, POD, payable on death, and joint tenancy with right of survivorship, all these things kind of bypass the will and the trust. Sometimes it's acceptable, sometimes it's not. Joint tenancy with right of survivorship means that if three people are on the account, the last one that dies gets it all. But whoever's opened it up first is also subject to creditors of all three of those people. So that's sort of the downside of right of survivorship. Now, payable on death, you don't have that problem because it doesn't pay on death until the last person. But not a problem with creditors, but then they can't access it while you're alive. So you can't win for losing on those. So if these are all issues, that's something that I would consider a living trust for. And do you all know what a living trust is? Would it be helpful for me to explain it? So living trust is like, let's say Dell. Dell is a company, and if Michael Dell is driving down the road and is incapacitated, the company is not going to end. They're just going to find the next CEO or whatever he is, and it will continue to operate. Well, so a trust is like a company also. If he drives down the road and dies, also the company doesn't end. The CEO will be just another person. So the same thing is true with a trust. It's like a little company which husband and the wife, or if you're single, then just the person would put everything they own in the trust, and then the trust owns it, so that when you die, there's no property to probate. So you don't even have to go to probate and have it on the internet, which is what happens these days. So if you have the living trust, it's not going to stop just because you died. So the next person, say your spouse, will be the continuing trustee, and if he dies at the same time, then you would have named somebody else. So that's all it is. So you would put everything in it except your retirement accounts. You would put your house in it. You would put real estate. You would put all your bank accounts in it, unless they are IRAs. People ask me what we count as an estate that we would recommend having a trust, and that's really a little bit hard to say. It depends on the family. But anything over $1 million we'd think about. But I have this continuum. All the way down here, I would say, no, you don't need one. All the way up here, I'd say, yes. If you have rental property in more than one state, I'm over here, do it, because otherwise you would have probate in each and every state. If you don't have any real estate and no, you know, bank accounts other than retirement accounts, I'd be all the way down here. No, it would be a waste of money and a waste of time, because it is more expensive. And you have to put everything in, which means real estate, you have to deed it in. Bank accounts, you have to retitle. So any questions about that? And I want to finish in time for questions.
Yes. As far as insurance policies payable on death, would you pay that to the trust, or would you?
You can. Yes, you can.
People name would be better to.
No, I think that's it. No, I think that's a good question. If you have got a trust set up, you would want to have it payable to the trust. Probably, it depends. You might want to pay it first to the spouse and contingent be the trust. The special needs that we're talking about, I'll talk about that there, because that's a good question. That would be a good use for insurance, and we like insurance. And so that would be a good use for that, would be to fund a special needs trust for a child with insurance. But anyway, let's go to not protecting your assets from lawsuits. I don't have too much on that. We really recommend, our first line of defense, I think, is umbrella insurance. It's really cheap. I mean, you can get $1 million insurance for what, a couple of hundred maximum, is that right? So 2 million, 3 million. So that would be my first line of defense on that. You can also, if you have a rental property, then you might want to think about an LLC, because otherwise you can lose everything if somebody gets injured there. You can also leave your property to your children, divorce protected, by putting it in a trust. And also remarriage protection, we can do the same thing. So estate taxes, I don't talk about that too much anymore, because it's raised to, if you're a single person, you can pass $11 million. And if you're married, you can double that. So it's like $22 million, but not too many people that I know have that kind of estate. But one thing I did want you to know about that is it is scheduled to end, so it's not forever. I mean, it used to be there for a while. If they didn't change it, it would stay like this. Right now, it's like this until, I think, 2025 or 6, and then it's scheduled to go away back to I don't know what. It's scheduled to go back away unless Congress does something. And I like it better when Congress has to do something for it to happen. This way they have to not do something. So anyway, that's an issue. And also, it includes everything. People think that an estate tax return, if you file it, you don't have to include insurance or retirement. But no, you have to include everything, and some things you even don't think you have. Like if something reverts to you, like if you've given something away and the deed says, if they die first, I get it back, well, then that's going to be included also. So here, this is the one I really wanted to talk about, special needs. It is so catastrophic for someone who is receiving government benefits to receive an inheritance, that we put this in all our wills and trusts now, just automatically, because anyone can have an accident and their child be involved in that. But so what happens is, if someone, whether it's a minor child or even an adult child who's receiving government benefits, if they inherit any more than, say, $2,000, then they're going to lose their benefits. They're going to be out of Medicaid. And it's pretty scary. And so if you set up a trust for them, this is called a special needs trust, you can have it set up such that they can continue to receive Medicaid. They're not disqualified, but they can also use some of this money to kind of increase the productivity of their lives, or at least make their lives easier. So you can't spend it for maybe food. Unless you decide that there's so much money you don't care about Medicaid anymore, then you can spend it for food. But we have it set up so it's such that if the expenditure is going to cause them to lose their benefits, then they can't make the expenditure. And we can fix that. I've had some happen where, despite all the planning, they had a retirement. Despite all the planning, an adult child who was receiving Medicaid was to inherit something. So before we got it to this person, we went to court, we got it changed, and so she wasn't disqualified from Medicaid anymore. However, it is different because on her death, anything that was spent on Medicaid by the state of Texas would be taken from whatever estate of hers was left. If it were done before all of this happened, then that would not be the case. So there is an advantage to planning for it, and of course it took a long time and cost more money to do that, but, you know, we do what we have to do. So procrastination is my last comment. And
put that off to the end.
You know, probably we should do that in the beginning. You know, we never know when the Lord's going to call us home. Or if you have a condition all of a sudden that you're diagnosed with and you can't get long-term care insurance anymore. I mean, you just never know about anything. So I'm happy to entertain comments, and if anybody wants a book, I'll give it to them, but I think we've got about, five more minutes that I'll answer questions if you have any, and otherwise, if anybody wants to call me, I'm happy to talk on the phone with somebody. Yes, Landy.
So how hard is it to, so if you're the administrator of the estate, mm-hmm. do you really want to get somebody, hire somebody to do that?
What do you mean?
The executor?
Yeah,
thank you. The executor.
Yeah, you probably, I don't know why you wouldn't want to do it, because, I mean, you're going to be dealing with a lawyer anyway, doing a lot of the work and asking you to sign things, basically. I mean, but there's a lot, you know, you have to go and clean out the house usually, and so there is a lot of legwork, but, you know, you have to decide if you want to do it or not.
It's not overly complicated.
No, it's not. Not really. I mean, some things you wouldn't know how to do, like getting retirement accounts can always be tricky, but you would just have to sign those things. But as far as you can get somebody else to come do an estate sale, I'm surprised how well those things work. So you don't have to get rid of all of that. But there's guidance. I mean, that's the whole point of the will and the trust. There should be guidance as to what to do.
I found it wasn't as difficult, but it just took perseverance.
Yeah.
Just continuing and continuing,
yeah.
Multiple phone calls.
Yes, yes.
Places, and it's very doable. It just
takes time.
Continue.
Yeah, and you can build in maybe compensation to the executor, sweeten it a little bit if you want. Did you have, you had a question?
I had a couple times.
Yes.
One was that friend of mine in Houston, it's very big on using trust, because
uh-huh.
we always think about if somebody gets incapacitated. And
right.
His concern was spendthrift children.
Right, right,
so
right.
He had it set up That's... where he calls it the W-2 trust, where the child has to produce a W-2.
I love it. That's great. I'll have to remember that.
And with the exception of health, education, maintenance, and
support.
Special needs.
Oh, okay,
support,
yeah.
Support, special
right.
needs. The trustee cannot give any money to the kid unless the kid was in college or working.
Yeah.
And he could, and he had it set up where it could be 50 cents on the dollar.
$50
a dollar.
Yeah.
So he wanted to make sure that kid was productive. So that's another...
dead hand control, yeah.
My second comment was, again, from another friend of mine, he called it the five rights.
Mm-hmm.
You want the right property to go to the right people at the right time, in the right amount at the right cost.
Interesting. Very good, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, Christine.
So, you know, I'm a young unmarried person, right. And I don't know much. So my question is, when you're planning for this, like, is it like at a certain age you should start planning, or a certain
when you're 18, yes, when you're 18.
Right.
Mainly for, you know, for the, if you...
Do.
And mainly for like those health those ancillary documents we call like the health care. I mean, you really want your parents, I would think, to be able to talk to the doctor about your condition. And so. Okay. If anybody wants one of these books, I have them over here. But if enjoyed, I'll let you just come. I'll stick them out here and you can get one if you want. So it's my pleasure to talk with you. I've enjoyed doing it. I thank you for your interest. And if you have any questions, I love talking about it. So,
thank you.
All right.